Arizonans and Americans across the country have been encouraged to get outside during the pandemic, both as a way to get out of the house and get some exercise, but also because COVID-19 seems to spread less well in unenclosed spaces. The Trust for Public Land issues an annual rating for cities and towns' park systems. The group looks at four criteria: access, acreage, investment, and amenities. And the Park Score Index finds Arizona cities and towns are generally not in the top tier nationwide. With me to talk more about this is Linda Huang, Director of Strategy and Innovation at the Trust for Public Land. And Linda, first off, how has the importance of parks and the way we use them changed over the past year or so?
I think during this pandemic, people really started to understand the value of nature. And, you know, we were stuck inside our homes for so long. And so for a lot of people, the only respite that they had was to get outside and to go to their local parks. So a lot of park systems, a lot of cities that we work with saw park usage just go through the roof.
So let me ask you about your Park Score Index, and I want to ask specifically about Phoenix, because Phoenix came in 56th in the country in your rankings. And I think for a lot of folks, especially folks here, they'd look at that and look at some of the things that you measure and say, huh, I thought that number would have been higher.
Yeah, so I think what we noticed was that generally in the most recent year for which we have data, there were high capital expenditures for a lot of cities reported. And so that reflects money being spent from park bond measures in recent years from about 2016 to present. In 2018, we added private park spending, and we also monetized volunteer hours to the investment per resident in that category. And so because spending is a three-year average, this was the first year in which those private dollars have been fully reflected for the cities. This means that increases, particularly for cities with a strong philanthropic presence, like Boston, for example, just saw that reflected in the rankings. And then cities without a significant nonprofit or volunteer presence may have seen a corresponding drop. And so for Phoenix and a lot of the cities in Arizona, actually, there isn't a strong philanthropic presence. So a lot of the spending is coming directly from public spending.
That's interesting, because I would think that as city budgets are stretched with the pandemic and everything that cities are having to do and lost revenue, that potentially puts Valley cities, Maricopa County cities in even more of a difficult spot going forward if there isn't that philanthropic investment in parks, if it all has to come from cities and cities don't necessarily have the money to do what maybe even they were planning to do a year ago.
Yeah, that's right. That's exactly right. I think cities are just, you know, some cities are catching up to that and they're realizing, you know, or they're looking to other models like Boston, like Seattle, where you have a significant philanthropic presence that can come in and kind of help fill some of those gaps. And so, you know, in Phoenix, public spending was on the order of close to $130 million. And from private spending, that came in about just under $200,000. So it's a much smaller portion of the overall spending per resident.
One of the categories that you looked at was amenities, where Phoenix scored a 28 out of 100. And I'm wondering, in terms of amenities, like a number of parks in Phoenix are just sort of mountain preserves where it's hiking trails. You don't necessarily have playgrounds. You don't necessarily have basketball courts or tennis courts or other sports fields. Is that the kind of thing that Phoenix might have lost points for in that category?
That's exactly right. Yeah, Phoenix is one of these great cities that has a lot of natural amenities that people can readily get to. And so I think because of that, they just offer fewer number of these amenities that we do track.
So you mentioned that people have been really seeking out parks and outdoor spaces like those during the pandemic. Do you see that as a permanent shift that maybe people and even maybe cities that maybe had not been thinking so much about their parks and outdoor spaces over the last number of years, it's happening now? And do you see that continuing into the future?
I do. Actually, I do. It's such a great shift. What we've been hearing repeatedly this year from a lot of park agencies that we work closely with is that people are discovering unique, different parts of their park systems, different parts of the cities that they had just never taken the time to explore before.
And presumably, with increased usage, cities would have to come up with increased money, right, to maintain it and to improve things that need to be improved and maybe even add more space, you know, if the space they have is becoming overcrowded.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, we have a conservation finance team that works with cities, counties, municipalities to help them raise public dollars for funding. Across the United States, you know, it's a nonpartisan issue that people are voting to tax themselves to fund their parks and open spaces.
When you talk about access, another one of the factors you consider in your index, are you able to see exactly who has access? And I'm thinking specifically, for example, of residents in low-income neighborhoods or low-income zip codes. I'm wondering if they have the same kind of access to park space, outdoor space, as residents in more affluent zip codes or more affluent communities. Are you able to see that, or is that maybe a little too granular based on the kind of data you look at?
No, actually, so we are able to look at park access with quite a bit of granularity. So we know that 100 million people today can't walk to a quality park within 10 minutes of where they live. And that 10-minute walk statistic for, you know, the 14,000 cities and towns where we track it is a really important, powerful measure of access. But we now know it doesn't actually tell the complete picture. So last year, we did an analysis. We released it in a report called The Heat Is On that looked at different elements of park quality like acreage, population density, and urban heat. For us, it helps us understand additional aspects of park equity. And what we found is that in low-income communities of color, parks are often smaller and they serve more people. And that's problematic because in pandemic times, that can lead to more park pressure, right? Because that's effectively less park space per person. So our analysis basically showed that, you know, these parks in majority white neighborhoods are five times larger and they serve five times fewer people than parks in communities that are majority communities of color. So it's a level of granularity that is pretty important to highlight for park agencies as they think about, well, how can we ensure that, you know, we're doing everything to offer equitable park systems?
All right. That is Linda Huang, Director of Strategy and Innovation at the Trust for Public Land. Linda, thanks for your time. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Mark. Have a great day.